anymore. Well, welcome to New Horizon Church. If you have a Bible, we're going to be in Proverbs again this Sunday, Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8 through 19. And as you turn there, I want to tell you how I've entitled this message this morning. It is Bad Company Corrupts Beautiful Character. Bad Company Corrupts Beautiful Character. So if you've spent time around me long enough, maybe you can pick up on the fact just by the way that I talk that I'm not from Pittsburgh. You guys picked up on that by chance? Those of you that are from here, I'm from South Carolina. That's where I grew up. That's right. And this is what they say in South Carolina. I don't know if you've heard this before, but they tell you that you can take the country boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the country boy. Does that make sense? Now, here's what I mean by that. Is I grew up as a kid, like literally in cut-off blue jean shorts. Most of my days were spent outside barefooted. I don't know that I wore a pair of shoes until I was like 13 and had to go to school, because I didn't go to school until I was 13. I'm just kidding, I did. I went to school like everyone else. But I grew up listening to, in fact, my very first concert as a kid was Alan Jackson. Man, and before I went to that concert, look, my mama took me to the store and I bought a cowboy hat. I bought a belt buckle and a leather belt, and on the back of that belt had my name, which none of you probably know. My middle name is Dustin, and it had Dustin back there. Like, I mean, tight Wrangler jeans, some cowboy boots. Like, that was me growing up. Now, how did that little guy go from Alan Jackson and belt buckles to mohawks, tattoos, lip piercings, and screamo music? Cue it up for me, Darren. Come on. So this was my early 20s right here. How in the world do you go from Alan Jackson to who was that? For today. Well, I'll tell you how, is influence. That's how Will Cole became the punk rock screamo kid with a lip ring that my wife to this day will tell you she loved. She thought it was like the hottest thing ever. I'm thankful that it's gone. I don't know, I can't hear what she's saying. It better be nice. That's right. But the whole thing is, the way that I got there was because of the influence around me. When I left home and I spent time with my friends, man, they loved punk rock, screamo, metal music. And then I was hanging out with them. I was getting tattoos, dyeing my hair black, piercing my lip. It was like, it just happened. And so now as I share that story, hopefully you're thinking, man, I can think back to times like that in my own life. Right? Like, let's just think for a moment. We're use some hypotheticals here. If this is true, don't tell me it's true. I don't want to know it's true. But like, let's just imagine you go to a Steelers game with some friends. And you get to that game with those friends, and you find yourself drinking more in a four-hour period of time than you have your entire year. And you're sitting there at home that night, waking up the next morning. Hopefully it's a Monday morning. Right? Oh, there aren't many Saturday games. Anyway, and you just feel like, ugh. And you think to yourself, like, what in the world was I thinking? Well, I don't know that it was so much that you were thinking. I think it was the influence of people around you. Are you with me? You been there before? Or maybe if you have a night with the ladies, right? And these aren't your gospel gals. These aren't your gals that run with Jesus. These are just your neighborhood girlfriends that you work with and you see occasionally. And you go out, you have a ladies' night out. And these ladies, they don't guard modesty the way that you do. They're a little bit more flirty. And all of a sudden, you find yourself in a position where you're loosening up and being a little more flirty than you were. And you wonder, you're like, I got to get out of here. And you ask yourself the question, you're like, how did that happen? how all of a sudden have I become immodest and more flirty than I was the day before? Well, it's because of the influence around you. So I don't know if you've noticed this or not about life, but this is all about what Proverbs 1, 8 through 19 is about this morning, is that the company that you keep will rub off on you. The company that you keep is going to rub off on you. So here's what wisdom is going to call us to do. As followers of Jesus, or as people who are seeking to live a wise life, this is what wisdom is going to tell us, is that wise people carefully consider the people that they do life with. Are you with me? Wise people carefully consider those that they do life with. So here's the truth that we're going to unpack this morning. Cherish wisdom because sinful influence is corrosive. We ought to be people who cherish wisdom because the influence of sinful individuals around us will corrode the inner beauty that God is trying to cultivate in us. You guys believe that? Here's how we're going to unpack that this morning. Verse 8 through 9, I want you to know this, that wisdom is all about cultivating beautiful character within us. Wisdom is all about cultivating beautiful character within us. Look at Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8 through 9. Solomon writes, "Listen, my son, to your father's instruction. Don't reject your mother's teaching, for they will be a garland of favor on your head and a pendant around your neck." So I've already talked about this, but I want to reiterate the best that I can throughout this series some important features that Solomon and the writers of Proverbs continue to point us to. And one is this idea of listening. Do you guys remember last week? I talked about it at length. Solomon says that listening is a part of receiving wisdom. And what is listening if not to have a receptive disposition about ourselves? Right? Look at with Proverbs chapter 1, verse 5. He says, "Let a wise person listen, increase in learning, and let a discerning person obtain guidance." So if we're going to be people that obtain the wisdom that God has for us, then we have to be men and women that are receptive to listening. But here's what we also have to do. Solomon says it right here. There's another aspect to listening that we need to learn this morning. And that is that listening is remembering. Listening requires remembering. I mean, what does Solomon say? He says, "Listen to my instruction. Don't forget your mother's teaching." So what is he trying to help his son understand? He's trying to help him understand that listening isn't just receiving good instruction, but listening also requires remembering good instruction so that, here's why, if you guys remember, all of Proverbs is about is applying the wisdom of God in our everyday life. And we can't, right? We can't apply what we don't know. We can't apply what we don't remember. Now, I want to point out something really important here. If you look at what Solomon says, there's two individuals mentioned in this text. He said, listen to your father's instruction and don't reject your mother's teaching. So I want to point out something really quickly. Solomon is writing to his son, and his son is literally standing on the precipice, if you will, of adulthood. And his son has two paths in front of him. He can choose the path of wisdom that leads to life, or he can choose the path of foolishness that leads to death. That seriously is where his son is at the moment. Now, I want to point out something really important for us parents in the room, or maybe those of us who aspire to be parents one day. is as you look at Solomon's instructions, both parents are involved in raising up their son. He says, father and mother. So here's what I want us to get. If we are a parent, or we aspire to be a parent one day, it is God's design that both the mother and the father would play a part in raising up their children in a way that they would be ready to live a wise life. Now, I want to do something here that I hope is healing for you. Because as I read verses 8 through 9, here's what I immediately come up against. Is that the reality of many of us here is that we did not have a mother or a father that intentionally invested in our life. And I want you to hear it from me. I want you to hear it from God's word that that was not God's design for your life. God's intention as a good father is that you would have had a father and you would have had a mother that would have taught you how to live. And the sad reality of it is that moms and dads, for whatever reason, have abdicated that responsibility in your life. And here's what happened. You experience pain. You experience suffering in things that could have been avoided had your father or had your mother simply just taught you. And so here's what I want you to know. If that's you, because it's certainly me, that I want you to extend kindness to yourself. I want you to give grace to yourself because you didn't have someone teach you how to live. And that was not God's design. In God's perfect world, in his wise world, it would be a father and a mother committed to raising a son or a daughter to live a wise life. And why is that? Let's look really quickly at verse 9. Verse 9, Solomon says, for they, speaking of wisdom, speaking of instruction, speaking of knowledge, Solomon says, for they will be a garland of favor on your head and a pendant around your neck. So here's what I want. Here's what I think Solomon is saying here. Is that when a mother and a father commit themselves to teaching their children wisdom, what they are really doing is crowning them with beauty. Just think of that. Wisdom is a crown of beauty placed on the head of a child. And not only that, but he says it's a pendant, like it's a necklace. And in this culture, that necklace signifies status. You belong to a specific family. So here's what I think that Solomon is trying to help us understand. First of all, as an adult here today, wisdom gives you the ability to have a settled confidence on who you are and how you're supposed to live. But also as a father and a mother, when we teach our children wisdom, we are giving them that settled confidence as well. I mean, imagine being a person who lives in this world that not only knows who you are in Christ, but knows exactly how you should live. That's what Solomon is saying wisdom is all about. But here's what I want to point out really quickly. This is something I've been kind of like mulling over this week. Is whenever you think about wisdom, wisdom is always about cultivating inner character so that a person would live an exemplary life. So here's what we have to understand really quickly. Is that wisdom is not primarily about rules. I want you to hear this. Like if you're here today and you're not following Jesus or you're trying to figure out what does it look like to follow Jesus, living a wise life is not necessarily about doing the right thing or not doing the right thing. It's not about rules. Are there rules involved? Absolutely. Solomon is going to tell his son, he's going to tell him, avoid the path of sinful and foolish people. That is a rule. But here's what I want to point out, is Solomon doesn't just end there. Solomon goes beyond the rule, which is always the case with wisdom, to show the beauty of the rule. And the beauty of it is this, that when you avoid foolish people, you save your life from a tremendous amount of pain. So wisdom's not necessarily about do's and don'ts, although it is involved. Wisdom is more about unveiling the beauty of a well-lived life. So let me just give an example really quickly. I'm sure there are better examples, but this is at least how I thought of it this week. Let's just say for a moment that you struggled with envy, that you looked out at the world and you saw people and the things that they had, and it created envy and coveting in your heart. And you might find yourself wondering, like, man, geez, wow, I really wish I had what they had. I wish I had their job and their income. Could you just imagine, man, could you just imagine how easy life would be if I just had their life? And then you think about Jesus, right, where it's, hey, stop coveting. And you think to yourself, there's not a lot of power in that. If you just tell yourself, stop coveting, I can guarantee you, you will not get far with stop coveting. But if you take it beyond to the beauty of why you shouldn't covet, wisdom will provide you something better. And here's what I mean is, you tell your heart, stop coveting, but then you go beyond that and you begin to cultivate a heart of gratitude for the life you do have. Are you tracking with me? It's not just about stopping. It's about cultivating something in its place. You cultivate gratitude that leads to thankfulness. And then when you're thankful, guess what? That leads to worship. Wisdom is all about not just do this and don't do this, but do this and don't do this because this is the way to live. Is that helpful? Now, here's what I want to point out really quickly to our parents here. Look, we're going to, throughout this series in the book of Proverbs, here's what we got to keep in mind. The book of Proverbs is written from a father to a son. And so he is teaching general wisdom principles in the context of a parenting relationship, which means there are just going to have to be moments in these sermons where I talk to parents because these things can't be missed. But I also want to realize that not everybody here is raising kids, amen? That season of your life is done. You get to just love grandkids and send them home to deal with mom and dad with all the sugar you gave them while they were with you. But here's what I want us to pick up on, parents, right here, that's super helpful. Solomon actually provides you and I, as moms and dads, a helpful pattern to having difficult conversations with our kids. Like, in fact, my wife and I can't go into details, just find me after church, had one of the most awkward and difficult conversations with our kid just this week, and it helped us out tremendously. My son heard something on the basketball court in the neighborhood, and we had to unpack that with him. But here's what I want you to get. There are three things when it comes to having a helpful conversation with your kids. First, what we see here in Proverbs 1, 8 through 9 is address. The second thing we see is admonition. And the third thing that we see is motivation. So here's what, if you're raising kids, hear me. This is wisdom speaking here. Solomon, the address is, listen to the endearment. He says, my son. Like, do you hear that? I mean, you're a mother and you're a father and you're drawing your son and daughter near. The conversations that you have with your children are conversations that's not primarily about correction and discipline, but is it not from love? And so you look at your son and your daughter, and you're like, my son, come near. And the second thing we see is admonition. What does Solomon say? Listen to my words. So the conversation is very intentional. You have something very specific to share with your son or daughter, whatever that topic may be. And then the third thing, I think this is one probably the most important thing, is that a mother and a father in these intentional talks with their children will always motivate them with beauty. And that's what Solomon does here. He says, if you listen to my words and you don't forget our teaching, it will be a crown of beauty on your head. You as a mom and dad have got to work hard to not just teach your kids the do's and don'ts of life, but teach them the beauty of living a well-lived life. And that's what Solomon's doing here. That's what he's doing. I love the way that David Hubbard put it. So David Hubbard, he's a writer, a commentator on the book of Proverbs. He says this. He says, obedience makes a person delightfully outstanding to others and gives them something to cherish. Gives them something to cherish. Now, I get that I'm sitting here, I'm in a church on Sunday morning with people that I know well, and the majority of us here understand our role when it comes to raising our kids. But that's not everyone here. And that's certainly not everyone in our culture. I think one of the things that grieves me about living in 2025, if I can just be frank, there's a lot of things, but one of the primary things that grieves me is the abdication that parents make towards raising their kids. It seems to me today that parents are primarily letting school teachers, letting school boards, letting social media influencers, letting mainstream culture raise their children, when it's the primary role that God has given us as fathers and mothers. And just this fall, I was sitting at a Mars football game. And when you go to these games, man, I get a chance to meet people in our community, and it's so nice. But I was sitting there talking to a parent. And this parent was just unpacking to me. They were saying, Will, you know, they're really kind of like word vomiting, just like spewing over, and I'm just listening. And the primary stressor in this individual's life was they were overworked and didn't have time for anything else but work. And then he just out of the blue says this. He says, but you know what? He says, I'm doing my job to provide a roof over my family's head, provide my kids with activities and toys. And then he follows it up with this. But the rest of life, they just got to figure it out. And you know what? Listening to that individual share that, I thought to myself, like, I'm not surprised. A person once told me, a guy named Chip Dodd, he says, you can't give someone what you don't have. This individual doesn't know how to live life well. And because he can't live life well, guess what? He can't teach his children to live life well. But here's what I want us to understand, and we'll move on, is when it comes to wisdom, wisdom never encourages us to let people figure out how to live, ever. And yet, that seems to be the primary attitude in our culture today. It doesn't matter if it has to do with the gender and sexuality of our child. It doesn't matter if it has to do with their spirituality or their course of action in life. It seems to me that the most part, people seem to think that the loving thing to do is to just let people figure life out on their own. But what we see when we look in Proverbs 1, 8 through 9 is first and foremost, parents never just let their kids figure things out, and neither does God. So here's my encouragement to us today. If you're here today and you're trying to figure out what does it look like to live well, let me tell you something. You don't have to figure it out. It's already been given to us. The life that we want to live, the life that we long for, has already been given to us. And Solomon says it is accessible if we would just simply listen and not forget. Now, went a little bit longer than I wanted to right there, but wisdom isn't just about cultivating inner character. Wisdom is also about warning us of the dangers of sinful influence. And this is where I want to go next. The second thing that wisdom is going to do is wisdom is going to uncover the danger of sinful influence around us. So I want you to listen to Solomon's words as he continues to teach his son. He says this. He says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not be persuaded by them." See, there's a rule. Solomon is laying some groundwork. Don't be persuaded. But then what is he going to do? He's going to go on to reveal why. If they entice you to come with us and say, "Let us ambush and kill. Let us attack some innocent person just for fun. Let's swallow them alive like Sheol, whole, like those who go down to the pit. And we'll find all kinds of valuable property and fill our house with riches. Come on, throw in your lot with us and join us." Solomon says, do not step foot on that path. So here's what I want to point out really quickly about what Solomon does that I think is quite refreshing. First and foremost, Solomon is brutally honest about the people that surround his son. He calls them sinners. You can't get more honest than that. And you have to ask yourself, like, what makes a person a sinner? What is Solomon talking about here? Well, a sinner in this context is someone who has no fear of God. When it comes to the law of God, not only do they disobey it, but they also undermine it. So Solomon is brutally honest about who they are. But then I love this about him. It's really refreshing. He's also realistic. Because here's what Solomon understands, is that sinful influence can be at times really enticing. I mean, surely you know. Surely you have felt the tug of sinful influence in your own life. Surely you felt the influence of other people around you and the tendency to want to go and do what they're doing. What Solomon is helping his son see, he's helping his son see who they are, but he's also helping him see how they influence him. Now, I want to point something out really quickly that's really important for us to grab here in Proverbs chapter 1. Out of all the kind of commentators that I read this week, everyone seems to point out the same thing that's really interesting to me. Out of all the lessons that Solomon could have chosen to open the book of Proverbs with, he chose to open the book of Proverbs with community. Solomon could have chosen marriage. Solomon could have chosen parenting. He could have chosen finance. He could have chosen sexuality, which all of those things he's going to talk about. But the one thing that Solomon decides to open the book of Proverbs with is the influence of people around us. You got to admit, that must mean it's pretty important, right? And here's why I think, two reasons why I think Solomon does this. Is one, if you remember, Proverbs is all about teaching us how to do what? Live in community. That's what Proverbs is all about. If you remember Proverbs chapter 1, what is it? Verse 3, it says, "For the wise are prudent in instruction, receive righteousness, justice, and integrity." Do you guys remember how we defined all of those terms? What is righteousness? Righteousness is living in right relationship with each other and with God. What is justice? Justice is treating everyone fairly and impartially, just like God does, and being a protector of people who are marginalized. And then what is uprightness? It is living in alignment with God's standard in life. So I think the reason that Solomon chooses to talk about community is because if we're going to be people who live in wisdom, we are going to be people that enrich the community around us, our relationships. But the second reason I think it's so important to Solomon is because, I mean, just think about it practically. You live all of life in community. Every hour of your life you will be spending with someone. Whether that's your spouse, whether that's your grandkids, whether that's your children and your children to you, whether that is at work or with the men and women that you hobby with, all of your life will be spent in around people in community. And Solomon wants you and I to understand the dangers of surrounding ourselves with people that are not going in the same direction as we are. So let's look at this real quick. Solomon says this in verse 10. He says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not be persuaded. If they say, 'Come with us, let us set an ambush, kill someone, and swallow them alive,' like Sheol, like those who go down to the pit, we'll find some valuables there." So here's what I want to point out really quickly that Solomon does, is he digs, again, parents, but not just parents. Like if you're, like, again, Solomon is taking the parenting relationship and trying to help us all understand how to live well. So this applies to everyone here. But what I want you to understand is Solomon is digging deep. He's digging beneath the surface and revealing for his son why he should not run with these people. And the first three things he says about them, it says, let us, what does it say? Let us ambush, kill, and plunder. Now, what is Solomon getting at here with this hypothetical gang of people? Is every single one of these activities violates a law of God, every one of them. In Exodus chapter 20, where God outlines his law, what does God say? He says, you should not kill, you should not steal, and you should not rob. Man, that's that southern accent right there. Steal. Don't steal, guys. You shouldn't kill, steal, and rob. Every single one of these behaviors undermine God's law. Now, as I was reflecting on this week, I can categorically say in all my 40 years of life, I have never been invited to go rob somebody. Ever. And if I'm guessing, you haven't either. And I don't imagine you will ever be invited to go and rob, steal, and kill. Am I right? If you're here today and you've participated in a robbery, let me see your hand. It's just not going to happen. So then, what is Solomon saying? Is Solomon giving us a hypothetical situation that you and I will never face? No. What Solomon is trying to help his son see and help us see is that we are going to do life around people every single day who undermine the law of God. And when we spend time with those people, they are going to corrode the godly character that you and I are trying to build. And it's for that very reason that Solomon tells his son, he says, do not follow their path. Why? Because they're not intent on obeying God. Now, this is a New Testament principle. I want to try and point out as much as I can when these Old Testament principles cross over to New Testament realities. If you guys know the Apostle Paul and his writings, you know in 2 Corinthians, the Apostle Paul tells us this: what partnership does light have with darkness? What is Paul pointing at? Paul's pointing at the same wisdom principle that Solomon is trying to teach us. For what partnership is there between righteousness and lawlessness? Or what fellowship does light have with darkness? What is Paul calling us as Christians to do? He's calling us to consider who we spend our time with. Now, just recently, I had an opportunity to go to D.C. with three of my favorite people in the world. And yes, my wife is one of those three. I got to go to D.C. with Aaron, Alex, and Kayla Dixon. Send Network did this Northeast regional gathering where they brought all the pastors and church planters together for a weekend of vision and worship and teaching. But we had a lot of free time to go and explore the city. Now, when we went and explored the city, we found out some things about ourselves that we did not know. We have traveled together many times, but we hadn't traveled a new city, an urban area together at all. And so we all figured out very quickly within the first couple of hours of that day how each of us are wired. And it was so interesting. Some of these won't surprise you. Alex, we all decided as a go-with-the-flow kind of guy. It doesn't matter. You could lead that dude into a burning house. He's going to follow you in that house. Now, what did surprise me, though, is Kayla. Kayla is like this little urbanite, man. Like, this girl can navigate a city. Like, we were just shocked at how quickly she could get the subway map, understand Uber, and get us from point A to point B pretty quickly. My wife, this shouldn't surprise you, was very calculated. Her number one question throughout the whole trip was, are you sure? Shouldn't we call and make a reservation? And here's what we'll, this is the name, look, I'm almost scared to share this. I don't mean this in a negative way, I mean it in a fun way, but I earned the nickname, the machete. Because it did not matter what the obstacle was in front of me, I was going through it. It could be a card that gets on us on the subway, and Aaron would go, Will, are you sure one card would work? Oh, it'll work. I'll pay for us all. Beep, beep, beep. Guess what? Doesn't work. Restaurant only takes three people. Oh, they'll take a fourth. Don't worry about it. Let us go right in. Nope. Not taking more than three. So very quickly, we realized that if we're going to navigate this city, that something very important had to happen, is they had to start questioning if Will really knew what he so confidently thought he knew. And they did that. And the trip, man, it got beautiful after that. It was great when we all started working together as a team. But didn't start to work until they started to question, Will, do you really know where you're going? Now, the reason I share this story is because wisdom does not disregard influence. It doesn't. It never disregards influence. And I get it. I'm sitting here talking with adult men and women, and here's what I know, that I think that you are pretty confident in resisting influence. But can I tell you something? If the human heart was that capable of resisting sinful influence, why in the world would the very first lesson Solomon chooses to teach us be about influence? I think wisdom would say this, that the most important question that you can ask of the people that you do life with is this: are we going in the same direction? That's the most important question you can ask. Now, finally, as we wrap this up this morning, wisdom is all about cultivating inner beauty, and Solomon warns us that wisdom doesn't disregard sinful influence because it's corrosive. But here's the final lesson as Solomon brings this all together. He's going to tell us that wisdom ultimately protects us from death. Wisdom will protect us from death. Look with me at Proverbs chapter 1, verse 17. Solomon says this: it is useless to spread a net where any bird can see it, but they ambush and kill themselves. They attack their own lives, and such are the paths of all who profit dishonestly. It takes the life of those who receive it. So, I don't know if you've ever been hunting. In all likelihood, probably not the majority of us. If you ever want to go hunting, there's a gentleman here that can take you and teach you all you need to know, but you got to be a receptive listener and learner, or he won't take you, and that's Darren Tryon. Dude knows how to hunt. He loves hunting. He has taken me many times. And I often ask him, I'm like, Aaron, why is it that you let me go hunting with you? And he's like, well, it's because you listen. And he's like, I don't have much patience for anyone else. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll continue listening. But here's what I've learned about Darren, is he knows what he's doing when it comes to hunting. And the thing that you've got to understand about hunting is the art of concealment. What makes a hunter successful is his or her ability to conceal their outline, conceal their scent, conceal their location. Why? Because animals aren't stupid. And that's Solomon's whole point here, is animals, not only can they see traps, not only can they sense people, but when they do, they will avoid death. But he says, the fool, the one who disregards the fear of God, are stupider than birds. They cannot see that their own life choices are harming themselves. And that's what he means. He says, when he kills, they kill themselves. What is Solomon trying to help us understand? Is that the life of a fool is self-destructive. So if the life of a fool is self-destructive, then what is the life of a wise person? The life of a wise person is one that leads to life. And the entire lesson that that Solomon is trying to help us understand here is found in verse 19. This is, if you were going to, Solomon concludes his teaching here. This is what he says. Such are the paths of all who profit dishonestly. It takes the life of those who receive it. Here's what Solomon is trying to help us get and help his son see, is that the path of the fool only ends in their own demise. So here's what we see in Proverbs 1, 8 through 19. Is, you guys remember, we talked about this in Proverbs 1, 1 through 7, is that God is the creator of heaven and earth. He's a wise creator. And when God created this world, it sort of ingrained in the very fabric of creation are rules. And one of the rules that God has sown in the fabric of creation is this, that God has designed inevitable outcomes for foolish and sinful living. They are unavoidable. They're unavoidable. And again, a very Old Testament concept over in the New Testament, in Galatians chapter 6, the Apostle Paul writes this. He says, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For what you reap, you will sow. And so wisdom, it cultivates inner beauty. Wisdom warns us of the dangers of sinful influence. And finally, wisdom ultimately protects us from death. So here's how I want to conclude this sermon this morning. There's a man that used to walk this earth not too long ago, and his name was Jesus. And Jesus is one who described himself as the way, the truth, and the life. And one day Jesus was with his disciples, and he was teaching about the way. And he had his disciples with him. He says, guys, much like the Father in Proverbs 1, 8, and 9, he says, men, women, I want to teach you something very important about life. He says, there are two paths in life. He says, there's a wide path. Man, is that path easily to be found. And not only is it easy to find, but let me tell you something, disciples, this path is traveled by many. So if you want company, you won't be alone. You can find that path. It's easy to be found. It's going to be traveled by many people. But I want to warn you something, Jesus says. That path ends in death. And I can imagine his disciples then would have been like me, been like, okay, then what's the alternative? And Jesus goes, well, I'm glad you asked. The alternative is this. There's another path. It's not quite as visible. It's really quite hidden. It's a narrow path. It's not easy. Jesus says, few find it. So there are going to be times that you're going to feel like you're lonely on this journey. Don't forget, I'm with you. He says, but I want to promise you something, that this narrow and hard to find path leads to life. Jesus, just like the Father and Solomon, looks at his disciples and says, every single one of us has a path to choose in life. We can choose the wide path that leads to destruction, or we can choose the narrow path that leads to life. But here's what I want us to understand, is that the path is not some concept that Solomon taught, but it is Jesus Christ himself. He is the narrow path. Jesus is the way. He is the truth. He is the life. And I want to just point out really quickly that it is Jesus himself that cultivates inner beauty in us. It's not only Jesus that cultivates inner beauty in us, church, but it's Jesus that promises us that he will be with us. He will be our company. He will be that influencing force in our life, teaching us to live in righteousness, integrity, and justice. And how can we be sure? Here's what I want to give you this, and we'll close. Solomon always demonstrates how wisdom leads to life, but he never really quite shows us what that life is. As you read Proverbs, you'll see he promises life. But what is life? It always seems to leave us hanging. Jesus comes along and he brings wisdom full circle, and he shows us that the life that Proverbs promises is found ultimately in him. Because he's the one that conquered death. He's the one that perfectly obeyed the Father and demonstrated how wisdom leads to life. And so I want to ask you the way the Father asked the Son, is as you stand where you are today in your life and you look ahead, you ask yourself this question: what path am I on? Let's pray. Father, first of all, I want to thank you for very simple, very life-giving teaching that comes from your word. God, thank you for reminding us today that wisdom is all about cultivating an inner beauty. God, thank you for warning us of the dangers of sinful influence around us. Lord, I pray that if there are men and women here today that are journeying with people that are not headed in the same direction they are, Lord, that they would find the courage to find new friends. And I pray that they would take a chance on us. God, thank you for warning us of the outcome of the fool. Father, if there's one thing I've learned so far in Proverbs, is that you are intent on leading us to life. God, there's not a single person here today that can't say that God has not demonstrated and shown us the end of all things. And ultimately, Lord, I want to thank you so much for coming and taking on flesh, for living a wise life, for obeying the Father perfectly, listening to his words, remembering his commands, living in righteousness, justice, and integrity. Jesus, thank you for living that life. And God, thank you for defeating death. So the promise stands for us today that if we want life, it's found in you. And we thank you, God, and amen.